They all came together and decided that it is Krishnadas Kaviraj, Goswami. He should be the one. He is most qualified to write for the whole world the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They all approached him. He was a very old man. They could have given the job to some young person who had much more hope of completing the work. But they gave to him. It wasn't simply because he sat on the banks of Radhakund and heard from Raghunath Das Goswami every day for 3 hours. But to write such a literature, which was to be the most important testimony of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, the most eloquent and authorized historical epic that would, in the whole creation, to establish Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. They all decided he should be the one to do it. Gopal Bhatta Goswami was present, Jiva Goswami was present. You should do this work. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is explaining what he thinks of himself. He's saying that I am lower than a worm in stool. How many of you had that realization? Have you ever studied a worm in stool? I must confess, I have done so. I have carefully watched, examined the nature of the life of a worm in stool. And it's really quite abominable. Well, he's not saying I'm like a worm. I'm lower than a worm in stool. I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. They were murderers. They were rapists. They were robbers and thieves. They were burning people's houses down. They were drunkards. They were abusing and blaspheming anything. But he's thinking, I'm more fallen, more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. And that's only the beginning. If anyone hears my name, they lose all their piety. And if anyone speaks my name, they become sinful. Hare Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada, because after, it takes one to know one. You can't. Only a saint can really understand a saint. Srila Prabhupada is telling us that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is not writing this verse simply as a matter of poetic, emotional literature. He actually feels it. He's actually identifying and feeling this experience. It's inconceivable. If a materialistic person were to think himself lower than a worm in stool, he'd be suicidal. He'd be in an insane asylum. Yes? Straitjacket to keep him from harming himself. I mean, there's no possibility of a more severe, intense degree of low self-esteem, depression. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is in a state of transcendental ecstasy. And the greatest saints are worshipping him, honoring him, and reading his literature as the highest. Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream of Vedic literature. The graduate study of Bhagavad Gita, and our acharyas teach us Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, is the postgraduate study. It begins where Srimad Bhagavatam concludes. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in the beautiful chapter where he's describing the highest levels of bhakti in all of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is a very, very powerful chapter, very elevated. The discussions between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told disciples that they should be very, very careful about reading this chapter. I mean, this section of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, very elevated. So he begins this chapter with the verse that I am suffering due to boils. I'm suffering boils due to envy. And I'm drowning in an ocean of sins. In this condition, I take shelter of the great physician, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm infected by the germs of sinful activities and suffering due to the boils of envy. In this condition, I take shelter of the supreme physician, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is his spirit. And he's taking shelter. That whatever I'm speaking, it is not my words, it is the words of the Lord. Miraculously, he's speaking through me. I don't know how. And he's worshiping, offering his obeisances, surrendering and worshiping. Not only the Panchatattva, not only the Goswamis, but even the neophyte new devotee who's just coming to the path of bhakti. I worship their lotus feet and take the dust on my head. That is position of such a great Mahatma. Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigena Bhujai. People cannot understand the mood of a great devotee. Because great devotees really feel themselves most fallen. Because in that state, they could wholeheartedly cry out for Krishna and access the supreme mercy of Radha Damodar. So here is Prithu Maharaj. In that same spirit, he is presenting himself to the four Kumaras as a very ordinary person. He's not saying to the four Kumaras, I am Shakti Vaish Avatar. I'm specially empowered to rule over the world. He's not giving list of all of his great accomplishments. He's saying, I'm in this household life with wife and with children and with so many responsibilities, and I'm very fallen. I'm too much attached to this material life and sense gratification and all these things. What is my hope? What is our hope? What is the hope of people like me in grihastha, in family life? And the Kumaras are giving their nice explanation. It is Leela of the Lord. Sanatana Goswami also said like this. Sanatana Goswami, when he approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Varanasi, he didn't portray himself as a Saraswat Brahmin who was the prime minister of the state, who was a learned scholar of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, I'm the most fallen. I'm so fallen. I'm so addicted to materialistic life. He was saying it with tears in his eyes. I'm so ignorant. And what's so bad, what is so shameless, is people call me a learned scholar and I believe them. I don't know who I am. I don't know where I'm going, where I'm coming from. I don't know who is Krishna or what is the goal of life. Please instruct me. I'm helpless. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami, actually, you know everything. You are so learned. You are so realized that you are fit to be my guru. But still, for the sake of strictness, you are taking this role. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami. And through Sanatana Goswami, he instructed the whole world. Even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking questions to Ramananda Rai. And Ramananda Rai said, this is the way devotees talk to each other. Very inconceivable. Ramananda Rai said, I am just a lowly Shudra who wants to be the servant of your servant, attached to all materialistic affairs. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was praising him. Was praising him. That what I am learning from you, you are speaking the most profound knowledge to me. And Ramananda Rai said, No, I am saying nothing. I am just like a stringed instrument, and my tongue is like the string. And you are the musician. Whatever you are making me say, that is what I am saying. Took no credit. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replies, how can you say this? I am just a Mayavadi sannyasi floating in the ocean of Mayavad. I'm just philosophy. What do I know about bhakti? Hare Krishna. But Ramananda Rai, it is your wish, I will instruct you. So here the four Kumaras are giving such beautiful instructions to Prithu Maharaj. And today's instruction, which is so very important, is describing how those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance. So the first qualification is we must have strong desire. Without strong desire, it is not possible to resist the temptations of hedonistic activities or maya. Because everything is based on our desire. Krishna, who is within the heart, gives us sarvasya chaham hridishani vashto. That from within the heart, Krishna gives us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness according to our desire. Krishna gives us strength and power to resist maya according to our desire. Why is it that some people, they are so much overwhelmed by the material modes of material nature, and others, somehow or other, they can resist and live a life of purity and integrity? Krishna tells in Gita that he's not partial. He's equal to everyone. He's willing to give the same thing to everyone according to how we approach him. Hare Krishna. It is all based on our desire. The super soul in the heart is simply fulfilling our desires. And he's so merciful. He's descending into this world and speaking what desires we should cultivate and what we should avoid. And he's speaking through the scriptures, speaking through the saints. Same message, universally, in all the great spiritual traditions and religions throughout history. In the Vedic literatures, he gives a much deeper, intensified, and comprehensive explanation. But the same basic principles are there. Srila Prabhupada explains, religion means to follow the laws of God. And the laws of God are the same. It's not that the laws of America are different between Russian immigrants and German immigrants. Laws are the laws for everybody. If you break them, you're going to be punished. If you follow them, you'll be rewarded by so much protection and facilities. So the laws of God are there for everyone. And who follows? How Krishna reveals himself, how Krishna empowers us, is simply really based on our desire. I mean, the desires that we have now are karmic reactions to the desires we have cultivated through our actions and our words in the past. The Lord is so kind, He gives us free will. And really, the laws of karma and the laws of nature are specifically designed to ultimately condition or ultimately give a person the opportunity to really, from the core of their hearts, utilize their free will for the right purpose, according to their eternal nature. So every time we act, every time we speak, we are responding to a desire within our heart. And we have a free will whether we want to respond to that desire or whether we want to cultivate a higher purpose. And every time we act and every time we speak, according to the desire we are being promoted or impelled by, we are strengthening, deepening, and nourishing that type of desire. If people are just naturally addicted to sex life, it's because they weren't always like that. Desire, they cultivated it by giving into it, giving into it, giving into it, giving into it. Some people are just very angry by nature. Why? They had free choice. They gave in to anger, gave in to anger, gave in to anger for so many times that in this birth it's just uncontrollable, very difficult to control, almost impossible. Some people, they just, very difficult to have any conception of faith in God. So natural, so easy to have faith in God. Because in this life or in previous lives, they have just chosen to surrender to that desire to defy God. Hare Krishna. So really, everything we are is based on the desires we have chosen to try to fulfill in our previous lives. So desire is everything. To become Krishna conscious is a matter of desire. The whole process of bhakti is to cultivate the desire to serve and to love Krishna. That is why association of devotees is so very important. Fifth canto Bhagavatam describes Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahuravam Uktes Tamodwaram Yoshita Shangi Shangam. By associating and serving great souls, the doors to liberation are open wide. But by associating with people who are materialistic and too much addicted to sense gratification, the doors to the lower modes of ignorance are wide open. Because what we associate very much affects our free will, our desires. So if we want to make real spiritual advancement, it is imperative, it is essential that we cultivate very strong desire, burning desire. Nothing will get in our way. We see materialistic people who have desire for money, how they will work so hard. Prabhupada says, practically foaming at the mouth like ass, just working, working, working. Such strong desire for money. And many of them get their money. Athletes who want to be champions, they work so hard, they have such strong desire, so much determination, just to run faster than others, or throw balls farther than others, or jump higher than others. It's based on very, very strong desire. Prabhupada tells the beautiful story of Bilvamangala Thakur. Bilvamangala Thakur, he was a disciple of a guru named Somagiri. But somehow or other he became distracted by Maya's charms. And he was addicted, literally addicted, just like people are addicted to alcohol or drugs. He was addicted to a prostitute named Chintamani. He was obsessed. Couldn't control himself. He knew it was wrong. But all of his knowledge, all of his realizations, they all were just eclipsed by his desire to enjoy this female form. And it describes he was going there regularly, practically every night, no matter what. He lived for this. Everything in his life was centered around that experience he would have at night. And it describes how one night it was a torrential rainstorm with high winds and freezing cold. And in those days, they didn't have nice automobiles with heat and windshield wipers and all of it. He had to walk. As far as we know, he didn't even have an umbrella. He was just walking through this torrential storm. The rain was just pounding on him. Cold. And he came to the river, and no boatman would possibly be around at that in a storm like that. And the river was over flooding. But do you think that obstacle could stop him from his goal? He swam across the river. And when he saw that he was drowning, he grabbed onto a log to help him float. And when he got to the other side, he found that the log was actually a dead corpse. Hare Krishna. And then he gets to her house. He's all battered and bloody and beaten. And the thunder's pounding. Lightning's shooting, and she couldn't hear anything. She was upstairs in her window. He couldn't get her attention. So he started climbing vines on the wall. And according to the legend, the vine was a poisonous snake. He thought it was a vine, and he climbed up and finally got to her window and knocked on her window, and she just looked at him. She was amazed. He came in and he was just practically devastated with the eagerness, with the strong desire to enjoy her. And you know, Krishna's in everyone's heart. So Prabhupada explains the super soul within her heart actually had Somagiri, Bilvamangala Thakur's guru, speak to him through the mouth of the prostitute. It wasn't really Chintamani speaking. It was his Guru Maharaj speaking through Chintamani. Super soul was speaking Guru Maharaj's message. And she just looked at him and said, such strong desire you have to enjoy me. If you had this desire to worship, to love Krishna, you would be such a great saint. And he heard that, and his life was transformed. Yes. What am I doing? Wasting my life. What am I getting out of this? Am I happy? I'm miserable. I'm a slave of lust. Yes. If I just had this strong desire, this determination to love Krishna instead of this woman, my life would be perfect. And he bowed down to Chintamani as his guru. And with her, and asked for her blessings for him to go to Vrindavan to find Krishna. And he did. And in his invocation of prayers to the most, one of the most elevated and glorious of all literatures, Krishna Karnamrita, he offers his obeisances to his Shiksha Guru Chintamani for help, for so significantly helping on the path of bhakti. And then he offers his obeisances to his Diksha Guru Somagiri and to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is decorated with a beautiful peacock feather. So strong desire is so important. To dovetail our propensities and our desires on the path of perfection. And those who do not have strong desires, how will they give up? When Prabhupada told us the four regulative principles, It was very revolutionary to come to the Western world and speak like this. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Very, very. Just Prabhupada quoted Lord Jetland, who was at one time viceroy for India or governor of Bengal, one of those. But he was very, very favorable and impressed while he was in India about the Indian culture and religion. And he asked one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, can you make me a Brahmin? And Prabhupada's godbrother said, yes, but you must follow these principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. And Lord Jetland said, impossible. What will I do? How will I live? That's the way the Western world is. And how did Prabhupada introduce the four regulative principles? From what we read in the biographies and what we hear from the early devotees at 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada was just preaching Bhagavad Gita, having nice kirtans, giving prasad, cutting apples with his own hands and distributing it, and then gradually he started cooking nice feasts for the devotees. And then he had initiation ceremony. And then the day after the initiation ceremony, Prabhupada posted, I think on a door, that for all initiated disciples, you must follow these four regulative principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meeting. And what did we do? He told him after initiation. Yes, Mahamuni, you heard it that way also? Because by his association and by chanting Hare Krishna, they actually developed a strong desire where they could actually do what even a very, very cultured Englishman said was impossible. How will I live? Raga dvesha vimuktaishtu vishayanindriyaishtadan atma vishaya vidheyatma prasadam adigachtati. By following the regulative principles of freedom, one can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord and thus become free from all attractions and aversions. These regulative principles are necessary. They are essential. At the time of initiation, Prabhupada had us take these two vows especially. Essentially, the vow of initiation is to be faithful to the spiritual master for our whole life and to strive sincerely to follow his instructions and assist him in his mission. That's the spirit of the vows we take at initiation. But Prabhupada would have us verbalize that we chant at least 16 rounds every day because this is the Yuga Dharma. Haranam, Haranam, Haranam eva kevalam kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatiranyata. In the age of Kali, there's no other way except the chanting of the names of Hari. When we take vow, then it just gives us a more intensified realization of the importance of performing that divine spiritual activity. And Prabhupada would explain, no gentleman or lady will break a promise before God. So taking vows actually puts a lot of pressure on us. It's much easier to just do it without vows from an emotional point of view. It may appear that way. But the vows are very critical because we need that type of pressure on us because there's so many temptations. There's so many distractions. And one of the greatest temptations is lethargy. Just lazy. There's so many other things to do. Why should I do this? But when we take a vow, it becomes very, very prominent. It's an inner pressure on ourselves. It helps us to take that to have strong desire. Taking vows is meant really to strengthen our desires to be faithful, chaste, and determined. And Prabhupada had us verbalize these four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Four pillars of sinful activities. Because when we give in to those things, what happens is we become conditioned by that experience and our desire for Krishna consciousness becomes less and our desire for sense gratification becomes more. So this verse so beautifully says, those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nations must not associate with the modes of ignorance. For hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. And our great acharyas understand that when Krishna consciousness is spread in a big way, it's not that everyone is going to really be seeking that highest perfection immediately. To some people, you know, even if you're doing sinful activities, just chant Hare Krishna. Just try to associate with devotees. Just take some prasad, even if you cannot give up your sinful activities. But those who have a strong desire And that is very rare in this world. People who have a strong desire for liberation, for them it is a necessity to give up these sinful activities. And it's also an expression of our love. Love means sacrifice. Love is not a cheap thing. Love is not a matter of just taking and enjoying with the beloved. Love is a question of sacrifice. Love is a question of having such a strong desire to please our beloved that we're willing to go through any difficult situation for that purpose. Love is tested in difficult times. Is it not? Sita and Ram, when Ram was banished to the forest for 14 years, Sita showed her love. Ram said, stay home. Everybody else said, stay home. But she said, I'm coming with you. Let my body be covered with tree bark. Let me sleep on the hard ground in jungles with rakshasas and insects and no proper house to protect us. I've given my heart to you, Ram. That was love. And when Sita was stolen, Ram fought an entire world war just for Sita against Ravana and the Rakshasa dynasty. Love is not cheap. A friend in need is a friend indeed. Yes. You really understand who your friends are when you are in a very difficult situation. What do they call it? Fair weather friends? When it's fair weather, a lot of people like to hang out with you and be your friend. But when it's cold winter, most people go to Florida or something. It's very difficult. A friend in need is a friend indeed. And who's going to be there for us when we need them most, when we can't really give anything? That is friend. We have seen. I remember when I was a little boy, our next door neighbors. They seemed to be such a nice couple. They had three children, just like our family had three children. And recently I was with my father, and he happened to tell me what happened to them. He said, what happened is the father got sick. He got sick, and his body was not going to be the same anymore. So his wife was just too much disturbance to live with this sick guy for the rest of my life. So she left him. Let him go. Got remarried. And he's just alone. No one. Is that love? It never was. It's mutual exploitation. Real chastity, real faithfulness is never to leave. And it is tested. And what is the nature of a test? A test is such that when we pass the test, we grow through that experience. We gain deeper realizations. And in Krishna consciousness, the tests that come upon us are really the mercy of the Lord, because those tests, if we fail, we go back. But if we pass, we go up. But if there's no test, usually we just stay where we are. Krishna does not want us to stay where we are. Therefore, he sends he sensed crises and difficult situations and painful experiences. Why? Because we need to, in order for our desire to become stronger, in order for us to really more sincerely cry out for the Lord's help and pursue, we can't be lethargic. Either you pass or you fail. Krishna is willing to take that risk for all of us. He's willing to take the risk of our falling to get us off the complacent platform where we are. He wants us to become more intense in our prayer, in our sadhana, in our service, and in our desire. And it's the only way to survive when a serious test comes upon us. And it is through passing these tests that we show our love. That is mercy. Bhakti is about expressing the intent of our love to God. And what I am witnessing here, seeing His Holiness Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, his desire continually, perpetually, has just been so intensely strong to serve his Guru and Krishna, to serve the Vaishnavas. Came to this movement, he was a very popular person, had a political future, graduate of Princeton, so many opportunities for enjoyment in every direction. Gave it all up. Became brahmachari. One of the things he was famous for, even when I was way up in this lonely mountain in the Appalachian Hills of West Virginia as a pujari, never coming down. There was no telephone. There was no radio. There was no, obviously, computers, emails. We were so isolated, totally isolated. Would you like to hear a small example of how isolated we were? We knew nothing what was going on in ISKCON. I mean, Prabhupada was opening temples in Vrindavan and everything, and the whole world was there. We didn't even know it. Really, I didn't even know what was going on at Bahulaban, which was just, 2 miles away where the Grihasthas were. Very isolated. And I would have no chance to even talk to the other brahmacharis because I was up 1 a.m. to chant all my rounds and then wake the deities. Then I was on the altar doing the arti, then dressing the deities, and everyone would be gone by the time the deities were dressed. They were gone to another farm to do their work. Then they'd come back, and I would just do the artis, and I would be dressing the deities for night, and then they'd be asleep. And I'd put the deities to sleep. I was just completely isolated. Years later, when I was preaching, I remember the first preaching program I ever did. First preaching program. I was sent out in 1979. You go out and preach. That's what my authority told me. So I didn't preach. I had this old ripped up army blanket as a chadar. U.S. Army blanket. I had this dhoti that had cow dung on it. And I had these big green rubber boots without laces. When boots don't have laces, they're just flopping around. So I go into this, I think it was the Wheeling Catholic High School, to give a lecture. And they had about 100 students and several professors. And I'm speaking about Krishna consciousness, trying to give nice lecture. And after my lecture, there was a few questions. First question, why do you smell like a cow? Said, because I milk cows, that's why. But you don't have to smell like one to milk them. So I explained I milk cows. And the next question, they said, what did you mean by we should be serious about life because we may get sent to Vietnam after we graduate high school? I said, well, Vietnam War, it's such a... so many of my friends were killed in the Vietnam War, and so many... we were demonstrating against the Vietnam War. We were being drafted to the Vietnam War. I know people who had their legs blown off and arms blown off or killed in my... I know parents who's weeping because their children were killed in the Vietnam War. You know, if when you graduate high school, you may be drafted and sent to Vietnam. And then the teacher raised their hand and said, the Vietnam War ended 5 years ago. And I was so happy to hear that. I said, really? It's over? I said, it's over. The Vietnam War is over. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for giving me that news. He said, you didn't know that? I said, no. And the next question, what did you mean when you said President Nixon? I said, well, isn't Nixon president? He said, he was three presidents ago. I said, really? I didn't know that. He said, you're living in America and you don't know who the president of the United States is? I said, well, who is the president of the United States? And they tell me who it was. I think it was Carter or something like that. So anyways, very isolated. But one thing I was hearing about the austerities of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who was then Ghanashyam. Different Sankirtan, the devotees would come from Radha Damodar traveling party or Satsarup Goswami's traveling party. They would come up and they would tell about this Ghanashyam who would just, he wouldn't sleep more than a couple hours. And once a day, I think they told me he ate like some dates and cream cheese or something, or dates and half and milk. What was it? Some dates and yogurt or something like that. Once a day. And how he was working so hard for Prabhupada, how he would just be chanting his rounds so attentively. How sometimes, because he hardly slept, he would just stand up in one place right in front of a picture of Prabhupada and just chant japa like nobody's ever seen japa. And how he would just be risking his everything just to distribute Prabhupada's books and preach his message. Brahmachari. So he was a great inspiration as Brahmachari to us. So even in that isolated condition, I was hearing these things, which means he had a very prominent effect on devotees' lives. Very, very, very austere. Princeton graduate, who I believe he was, you know, congressmen in the United Nations were offering him jobs. And he's eating some dates once a day, distributing Prabhupada's books, giving up sleeping, eating practical. Very strong desire, determination. Give up sense gratification. Serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The will of Gurudev. When he was in the communist countries, same thing. Guru Das Prabhu was telling me. He traveled with him for about a month. He said he practically never ate. He practically never slept. He would just surrender at all times. And Guru Das Prabhu was telling me, the most amazing thing is he was always completely blissful. Saying this person, there was no sense gratification in his life. He was just... But he was enjoying the highest sense gratification of just surrendering to Prabhupada and being an instrument of compassion and getting these books in the libraries behind the Iron Curtain. Strong desire. And how he's been traveling, immensely traveling throughout the world. When I was in the Divnomors Festival in Moscow, thousands of people, and they had the biggest hall for his seminar, and it was, without question, the most popular seminar. Thousands of people coming to his seminar. There was five at a time, too. I couldn't even get in. I was out way outside. They were trying to push me in, but And the whole seminar was just helping devotees to overcome their problems in life. He gave so much of his energy. So yes, this is example. This is Acharya. This is his service. This is the nature of his desire to serve his Guru Maharaj. Prabhupada explained the first foremost qualification of a bona fide spiritual master is that he is a bona fide disciple. In spiritual life, the perfect teacher is the perfect student. So if we study Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaja's life, the whole philosophy can be very, very nicely understood in practical application. And what was that strong desire based on? Showing his love for his Guru and Krishna. And for all of you who are his followers at this time and in the future, understand really what he expects of you. Whatever he expects of you is always for the ultimate supreme benefit of yourself. That's all. A great soul doesn't expect anything from us that is for them. A great soul expects from us for us. It may even appear inconceivable. In fact, Prabhupada explains that great personalities go through sometimes very, very difficult ill health for several reasons. And one of those reasons, to give a chance of very, very intimate loving service to the disciples. Madhavendra Puri, Prabhupada, they appeared at a certain time to be helpless. Devotees had to pick Prabhupada up, carry him everywhere, do everything, wash him. And Krishna gives that chance to the devotees to have very, very special, special intimate service. But whatever our particular service and position is, we should know that we show our love by passing tests. The tests of the temptations for sense gratification, egoism, and lethargy. That is love. And love is a matter of the hearts. The bodies are vehicles to express our love and to direct our love. But really, that love is of the heart. And spiritual love cannot be disturbed by any physical, geographical conditions. Spiritual love is really on the platform of the soul. Prabhupada would sometimes say, "Do as I am doing." That means he has taught us everything, but his life was a very nice example of how to do it. And of course, we cannot imitate Prabhupada. It's something extraordinary. But we can follow in footsteps. That is how we show our love. By remaining faithful, by remaining chaste, and by remaining sincere. And all of you are really extraordinarily fortunate that Maharaj is going through this final pastime of his service to Guru and Krishna, and you could be so close. And you could be getting so many... of course, you are very fortunate to be very close, but factually, by his kindness, he's giving his messages to the whole world. Very, very painstakingly trying to nourish and feed you with everything he wants you to know. Not only how to be Krishna conscious, but how to also adjust your consciousness to what's taking place and to the future. It's a great, great benediction. Great benediction of mercy. Is there any questions? What time is class supposed to end? 9 o'clock? So actually we should end here. We have questions we could do tonight. Because we will do questions this evening because I've gone 36 minutes over time. Believe it or not, it's not the first time I've been overtime in a class. I'm sorry if I've disturbed schedule. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's making me feel very good about my deviant nature. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj ki jai. Sri Radha Damodara ki jai. Ananti Koti Vaishnav Brinda ki jai. Thank you very much.